Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 9, Vipul Maharaj Returns Home, Text 31. Aho bhata mama natyam, aho bhata mama natyam, manda bhagyasya pashyata, bhava chidak padam mulam, tatva yacheyat. Antavat. Translation, just alas, just look at me. I am so unfortunate. I approach the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can immediately cut the chain of the repetition of birth and death. But still, out of my foolishness, I pray for things which are perishable. Please repeat, alas.
Alas.
Just look at me.
Just look at me.
I am so unfortunate.
I am so unfortunate.
I approach the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
I approach the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Can immediately cut the chain of the repetition of birth and death. But still, out of my foolishness, I pray for things which are perishable.
Purport.
The word anatmyam is very significant in this verse. Atma means the soul, and anatmyam means without any conception of the soul. Srila Rishabhdev instructed his sons that unless a human being comes to the point of understanding the Atma, or spiritual position, whatever he does is ignorance, and this brings only defeat in his life. Dhruva Maharaj regrets his unfortunate position, for although he approached the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was always able to give his devotee, the highest benediction of cessation of the repetition of birth and death, which is impossible for any demigod to offer, he foolishly wanted something perishable. When Hiranyakashipu asked immortality from Lord Brahma expressed his inability to offer such a benediction, because he himself is not immortal. Therefore, immortality, or the complete cessation of the chain of repeated birth and death, can be offered by the Supreme Lord, the Personality of God himself, not by others. Harim dina na shutim taranti. It is said that without the blessings of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no one can stop the continuous chain of birth and death within the material world. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is also called Bhava Chit. The Vaishnava philosophy is in the process of Krishna consciousness, prohibits the devotee from all kinds of material aspirations. A Vaishnava devotee should always be Anyavilasita Shunya. Free from all material aspirations, the results of free activities are empiric philosophical speculation. Dhruva Maharaj was actually initiated by Narada Muni, the greatest Vaishnava, in the chanting of Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This mantra is a Vishnu mantra. For practicing the chanting of this mantra, one is elevated to Vishnu Loka. Dhruva Maharaj regrets that although he was initiated the Vishnu mantra by a Vaishnava, he still aspired for material benefits. This was another case for lamentation. Though he got the result of the Vishnu mantra by the causeless mercy of the Lord, he lamented how foolish he was to have strived for material benefits while practicing devotional service. In other words, every one of us who is engaged in devotional service in Krishna consciousness should be completely free from all material aspirations. Otherwise, we'll have to lament like Dhruva Maharaj. Aho bhata manatmyam, manda bhaga sapashita, bhava chidak pradamulam, tatva yache yat antavat. Alas, just look at me, I'm so unfortunate. I approach the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can immediately cut the chain of the repetition of birth and death. But still, out of my foolishness, I pray for things which are perishable. Mama Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Vidaya Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shnivadi Paskatya Desatana. Kumara is continuing his lamentation about asking for materialistic benedictions. The kingdom grave out of his great-grandfather, and revenge against his stepmother and stepbrother. That whatever we ask for in the material realm is going to be temporary. Therefore, Krishna says, Mamupetya Punarjanma Dukhaliyama Shastatam Nat Mubanti Mahatmana Samsidim Paramangvitaha. After attaining me, the great devotees who are yogis in devotion never come back to this temporary miserable world because they have attained the highest perfection. Without knowing that highest perfection, at least theoretically, that we have to know that there is something superior to material consciousness, to material existence. Otherwise, as Rupa Goswami says, Anya Vilasita Shunyam Jnana Karma Diravrita. Generally, people are interested in fruitive activities. That is, the mind has two aspects. One, seeking after material comfort and avoiding material discomfort. The very nature of material existence is uncomfortable. Therefore, in order to become comfortable, more or less, we're trying to eliminate the discomfort. The body is uncomfortable, therefore we have to eat, otherwise the stomach will become more uncomfortable. We may do some exercise, otherwise our body will become more uncomfortable. So comfort in the material world is, more or less, a lack of comfort. Or comfort in the material world is a lack of uncomfortable situation. And when we can find what we consider comfort, then we want to enjoy. Prahlad Maharaj said that, or Maharishabdi says, that Pumsa Sriya Maituni Bhavam Etam Taryara Urde Granti Mahu Ato Griya Kshetra Sutapta Vidhara Janasya Moho Yam Ahangmameti. Our material existence usually begins in a very innocent way. We just want to see what it's like to enjoy and control things without Krishna. Just a slight degree, like Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is undoubtedly a servant of Krishna, but he has a small sense of independence. A small sense of independence means he thinks he owns the material universe. And he thinks that by doing his duty, even in Krishna consciousness, as the Lord of the universe, he'll get a little bit of material satisfaction. Being a very obedient servant of the Supreme Lord, lording it over a universe. He gets a material body, full of mystic powers, being able to do all kinds of wonderful things. And therefore he gets a sense of satisfaction that I'm not just a jiva soul, I'm Brahma, the supreme jiva soul in the universe. Therefore, when Brahma came to visit Lord Krishna at Dwarka and knocked at the door, and the doorkeeper asked Brahma, "Who are you?" I suppose that was a little bit of an insult to his false prestige. What do you mean? How many people do you know have four heads? So he said, "I'm Brahma. Please ask Krishna. He's called me. I've come to see him." So the doorkeeper went back and said, "Brahma, Lord Krishna, Brahma's here." So Krishna asked, "Which Brahma?" He came back and said, "Which Brahma are you?" So he said, which Brahma? What do you mean which Brahma? I'm Brahma, the father of the four Kumaras, the lord of the universe. Here's my calling card. So he went back and said, all right, you can go and see him. So Brahma was a little agitated by this time.
With Brahma for...
Who are you? The gatekeeper can't even recognize Brahma. And then with Brahma, after some discussions, and he said, my dear Lord Krishna, I'm a little doubtful because you asked with Brahma, are there other Brahmas? So then Krishna called for the Brahmas to come, and some of them had 10 heads, some of them had 100 heads, some 1,000 heads, some 10,000 heads, some 1,000,000 heads, some 10 million heads. And it is understood that according to the size of the universe, Brahmas have different numbers of heads. So our Brahma has the least number of heads, 4 heads. Therefore it's known to be the smallest of all the universe. If you're proud of being in the smallest universe, well, that's a kind of proud pride also. Small is beautiful. We have the most beautiful universe because we have the smallest one. Brahma, not only did he see all these Brahmas who were compared to him, he felt like he was a little mosquito in the midst of giant elephants. But Shivas came from all of the universes, Indras came, he felt himself completely insignificant. Therefore his pride was diminished. But the material world is based upon pride and the current conception of the universe. We're the only ones here. Therefore we have eliminated any competition, at least within our mind, to becoming the Supreme. They've eliminated God, they've eliminated the demigods, they've eliminated all other living entities. And if there are aliens, they're kind of green people with weird faces riding around in saucer-like objects, abducting people for some reason or another. They're not advanced civilized personalities. They're weird people. You gotta watch out for them. So we've left ourselves as the predominant living entities in the universe, the only really civilized people. And historically we put ourselves as a supreme civilized society. But when you look at it, and of course the Western world is the supreme civilized place in the universe, so more or less we've set ourselves up as God. Of course, what kind of gods we are? Gods who are killing animals and killing their own children. We're a pretty weird God. But anyhow, in our imaginations, we've set ourselves as the center of the universe. And of course, those who are actually controlling, who gain control of the societies by economic manipulation, undoubtedly they have the biggest false prestige. They're controlling all the little gods, so therefore they are the center of the universe in their imagination. And to be the center of the universe, because after all, Radha and Krishna, they are the center of the spiritual universe, but since we've eliminated them, we have to set up our own shop as Radha and Krishna here. Maybe not Radha and Krishna, we call it Romeo and Juliet, Tarzan and Jane, something. We set up our little spiritual, so-called spiritual kingdom, where we have our goddess of fortune, we have our Chintamani palace, we have our plenary and partial expansions. The children who are intelligent, they're my plenary expansions. My children are less intelligent, they're my partial expansions. We have our car, and we consider that to be Garuda. So we set up this imaginary realm We're the Radha and Krishna, we're the laws of everything that be. Everything's expanding from us, from our bank balance. So we've established this imaginary world, and with the imaginary happiness and gratification here. Instead of divine spiritual bliss, we have sense gratification. Instead of prema, we have lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion, and madness. And we're fully absorbed in so-called enjoyment of these things in the name of so-called spirit and material progress. But this is simply a product of the illusory energy. No matter how much we get into our fruitive activities and increase lust, anger, and greed, envy, illusion, and madness, we still wind up with envy, illusion, and madness. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, karmana sukritasya hu satyikam nimralam balam radhasastikalam dukam agana tamasapalam satvam sanjayate jnanam rajaso lova evacha pramado moha tamaso bhavato jnanam evacha. If one works in the mode of goodness, then naturally there is some progress towards purification of lust, anger, and greed, getting out of material illusions and delusions, coming to our realize ourselves as a very small instrument for Krishna and his disciple succession. If one rejects that as not being worthy of one's goal of life, to get out of the material illusion, if one thinks material illusion, we should get more into it, then one works hard in the mode of passion in order to increase one's possibilities for sense gratification, either the quality or the quantity. Instead of eating a dead animal like a tiger and jumping on it and cutting out its throat and drinking its blood, we put it on a very nice plate with a fork and a nice napkin and a chandelier overhead and some music playing in the background as we devour this dead animal. And we think, oh, this is civilization. We've made so many arrangements. It's not an ordinary dead animal. I'm paying $500 for it. Therefore, it must be a special dead animal. So we've made all these arrangements to make our eating, sleeping, mating, defending appear to be something other than eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Write poetry about it, make movies about it, write books about it, award people prizes for it. But when you get down to it, it's just eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And in the modern civilization, a heavy emphasis upon mating and defending. But from such endeavors, Krishna says, from such grief to enjoy sense gratification comes dukkha, or unhappiness. And when that unhappiness comes, it is not that sometimes those who are pious, they realize their unhappiness, and they seek after some higher, some better activity. And those who are less intelligent, less pious, then they seek after more materialistic endeavor, and ultimately they wind up in the mode of ignorance. And in the mode of ignorance, what happens? Madness, illusion, bewilderment. And what is the result of acting madly in bewilderment, in delusion? You become completely insane. So we can understand that most people are more or less completely bewildered. Otherwise, how can they accept, for instance, they go to countries, they claim they're going there to help the civilians, and they wind up killing them all. And we think, oh yeah, they're very kind, they're nicely killing the civilians to protect them. So this is, obviously, it's complete ignorance and madness. And yet, in madness, people think, oh yes, very nice, it is all free. They're so kind. But Dhruva Maharaj, he's unhappy with this. That he asked for something temporary, and at least for some time, he got something temporary. Unfortunately, in modern civilization, people are not at all disturbed by their sinful activities, nor are they disturbed by their sinful reactions. Maybe they are disturbed, but due to the misdirection of the leaders, they don't know that there's any alternative to their present materialistic endeavors, which simply are futile and result in frustration or madness. Dhruva Maharaj, he had the good opportunity of associating with Narada Muni, and therefore he received the mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And by that mantra, he was able to get some good intelligence by which he endeavored to fix his mind upon Krishna. When he first went into the forest, he had some faith in the words of his mother that Vishnu would help him. But factually, he had no direct contact with Vishnu. He only had faith in the words of his mother. But by coming in contact with Narada Muni, he got a method by which he could actually become Krishna conscious. And out of anger produced from lust, he had a great endeavor to get Vishnu to give him that benediction. And indeed he got that benediction, but he was not satisfied. Although he had gotten a permanent abode also, but he felt sorrowful that he had not from the very beginning endeavored for something eternal. Of course, it's doubtful if he would have endeavored for something eternal, whether he would have put the effort into it that he put into it due to his lust and anger. But still, as a Vaishnava, when he became illuminated, he realized that, more or less, his desires were misdirected. Otherwise, at the end, he would have thought, I'm such a great personality. I endeavored to kill my stepmother and my stepbrother and get a kingdom greater than that of my great-grandfather. I get everything I want because I'm so great. So that goes contrary to the Vaishnava understanding. Or if we meet Vishnu, Krishna, who's so beautiful and wonderful and so kind, in his association we realize that actually the reason why I'm not up to my proper consciousness is because I'm accepting some illusory conception of life, and that illusory conception of life, my good qualities are being covered over, and therefore I'm suffering. In contact with Vishnu, he regained his good qualities and could realize the futility of his previous desires. So although we may not be the doer of the activities in the material world, although everything is being awarded to us by Krishna, still we're responsible for our desires. And our desires, where we accept and reject desires according to our intelligence. So until we have the proper understanding, the proper intelligence, then we won't know what to desire. As a matter of fact, we'll desire the wrong thing. And since we can understand in the present moment, not all our desires are of the divine nature, because we're not even aware completely of the divine nature, therefore one has to be very careful not to take too seriously every single desire that arises within our mind and cultivate such desires, either by letting the desires to constantly dwell within our mind, what to speak of acting on them. Instead, one has to incessantly learn how to chant Hare Krishna, take shelter of spiritual vision, so that we don't become deviated from the path of Krishna consciousness by desires. Dhruva Maharaj had a couple of desires, but we have unlimited desires. Dhruva Maharaj was completely determined to fulfill his desires, but we have little determination because we have little well, we may not have very much determination to fulfill any of our desires. We're being battered around by our desires just like a ping pong ball, back and forth. Therefore, only by taking shelter of Prabhupada's books and the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, trying to focus our attention and give our enthusiasm as much as possible to those two things, this process is suddenly given by our previous acharyas through Prabhupada, and at the same time trying to spread the Sankirtan movement. Unless we focus our attention on those two things, it's assured that will be deviated from the path of transcendence and simply will wind up cultivating either a mode of goodness, which is rare, and more likely passion, ignorance, our materialistic desires, because we're living in a very materialistic culture. Therefore, one has to be careful to not take seriously the Sankirtan movement, the suddenly given to us, and not take so seriously all the crazy things that arise within our mind due to our past activities. Especially in a relation between wealth and women, or for women, men. One cannot surpass those two ideas that I am a man or I'm a woman and I'm meant to enjoy in this material world. If one can't conquer those two things, either grossly and subtly, then one will become entangled either in gross sense gratification or profit, adoration, and distinction. That I'm not just an ordinary brahmachari or sannyasi or vanaprastha or vyasta. I'm the best of them all. I'm walking around in the biggest illusion. So that kind of mentality is very destructive for actual spiritual advancement. Or, before I only had a little sleeping bag, but now I have a first class one, therefore I'm making progress. So this profit, adoration, distinction is not very healthy either, what to speak of gross sense gratification. So any attempt, the karmis, they want to enjoy gross fruitive activities, and those who become a little bit more advanced in knowledge, they want to enjoy on the subtle platform. I'm something special, I am doing something special, everyone should appreciate how special I am, I should get special things like that. So the more we cultivate these things, the more we remain an illusion, if not become more deeply involved in illusion. Instead, one has to be very careful to understand our real position and therefore be careful as much as we can, because being an illusion is hard to do everything perfectly all right, but as much as we can, try to do something for the Sankirtan movement. And then by the grace of Śrīla Prabhupāda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we might be able to make some advancement out of our illusion, what to speak of cultivating our real identity as Krishna's servant. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
In this chapter, apparently Dhruva Maharaj was having success, he was alone. But in one comment, Prabhupada said that to think that we can advance without the association of a devotee is like living in a big hallucination. But apparently we can see that Dhruva Maharaj was alone in the forest. There were no other devotees.
He associated with the instructions of Narada Muni. He followed it very strictly. And he wasn't alone. He had Krishna in his heart. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also says, Abhayam Satyasam Shudhira Jnana Yoga Vyavyastiti Dhanam Dhamma Suryagnascha Swadhyaya Tapa Arjava. So under the topic of Abhayam, the first qualification of one in the renounced order of life, Prabhupada says that one should believe that I'll never be alone. The Super Soul is always with me. So one with such a conviction, he's never alone. Krishna is a real person. He's actually with us. But to get to that platform, Satam Pasangam Mangalvirya Samjido, we have to associate with the devotees, especially for the neophyte devotee who's not so advanced. Generally speaking, like Bharat Maharaj, without association, he got into difficulty, although he was a greatly advanced person, devoted. So sometimes it happens, and sometimes persons with such determination as Dhruva Maharaj, with full faith in the orders of the spiritual master, he realized Krishna in a very short period of time, because he took shelter of the orders coming from his spiritual great devotee, Narada Muni. Bharat Maharaj got into difficulty because he wasn't strictly following the orders of his superiors. Yes.
Thank you for a very nice lecture. How to not fall into these illusions. But generally, it is the tendency of me that I fall into these illusions. But how to develop taste in Krishna consciousness so that
one time Viraj Maharaj was walking Sri Prabhupada in Bombay by the ocean, and Sri Prabhupada gave a philosophical comment, and Viraj Maharaj said, "Thank you, Sri Prabhupada. I was a Maya, I didn't understand." The Prabhupada started to laugh and said, "You were a Maya, you're always a Maya." So where is there a question of falling into Maya? We're in the ocean of material existence right now. So how to get out? We have to become faithful to the instructions of our previous acharyas, especially Prabhupada's instructions coming into civil succession. We have to become faithful and practice, learn those instructions, and to the best of our ability put them into practice. And as the illusions are pointed out to us, we have to give them up in a practical way and in a intellectual way also. Practical service and give up our conceptions, our misconceptions. Gradually, but by the grace of Krishna, he says the Dhamma Buddhi Yogam Dham. If we try with enthusiasm and steadiness to serve the mission, then he said he'll give us the intelligence by which we are able to do it. Because this is giving the materialists intelligence by which they can build big, big buildings and skyscrapers and make endeavor for maintaining their materialistic civilization. So Krishna can also give his intelligence how to create a spiritual civilization. Just a question for in the proper association, associating with people who have an intense desire to create such a civilization as Prabhupada did. So we associate with him and his instructions, and those who are sincere in following those instructions, then we'll get the same desires ourselves. We can cultivate those desires ourselves. Anything else? Yes.
Why did Srila Prabhupada give so much importance to book production and book distribution?
Why did he give it?
Listen, why did he give so
because
much importance?
Otherwise we're in ignorance. Without these books, then we're completely in ignorance. So therefore, Prabhupada didn't want us to be in ignorance. He wanted us to become enlightened, make progress in devotional service. It says in Bhagavatam that Krishna Sudharma Bhagavate Jnana Dharma Jnana Dibi Saha Kalo Nashta Vishamesha Puranarko Dunoditaha. Now that Krishna has left the planet along with him to his own abode, taking with him Dharma and religiosity and knowledge, where has religious principles gone? They're now in the Bhagavatam. As it says, what is that verse? That Vyasamohito Jiva, Atmakam Trikunatmakam, Paropi Manyate Narada, Tat Kritam Chakripadite. The living entities are completely an illusion. Covered by the material energy, they are suffering the threefold miseries. But Anarata Pasamam Sakshat Bhakti Yoga Hokshaje. Seeing that the living entities fall into complete illusion, the sage Vyasadeva compiled Srimad Bhagavatam so that people can get light, get some intelligence in this dark age of Kali. anartopasamam sakshat bhakti yoga dehokshaje. Only that way we get rid of our false conceptions and materialistic endeavors. Otherwise, there's no hope. There's not some materialistic scientist or philosopher or philanthropist who's going to lead us out of this darkness of misidentifying ourselves with this material energy and endeavoring for materialistic pursuits. Only the Bhagavatam can help us, Bhagavad Gita. So we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Prantara Shimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Shri the Prabhupada Ki Jai. Bhur Pramanandai.